Passionate about broadcast media? Become a part of Broadcast Plaza, the number one broadcast media server on Discord, to discuss all about it with fellow community members and industry professionals, including your humble narrator. Broadcast Plaza, this is the place. Join today by going to the link in this episode's description or by logging on to discord.gg/broadcastplaza.
This is a Zaglund Original Podcast.
Today on the Zachary and Peaches Show.
We're celebrating indie animation this week on the podcast. I'll be at a quicker pace than usual. We'll explain why in just a moment. We'll be taking a look at the Lackadaisy pilot and how it stood out with its unique animation style and its way of telling a familiar story during the Prohibition era. And later, Emma talks about the amazing digital circus and its dark humor as its inhabitants survive and struggle to maintain their sanity. All this week, November 14th, 2023.
Connecting from Orlando and Baltimore, it's all about animation, autism, and everything else. This is the Zachary and Peaches Show with Adrian Mata and Emma Settles.
Welcome to the Zachary and Peaches Show, folks. I'm Adrian Mata.
And I'm Emma Settles.
We're in a bit of a time crunch this week, so we are going to be going about this as quickly as we possibly can here with everything that's going on. We were supposed to record a day or so ago, but unfortunately, you, Emma, were not feeling quite well that evening, and so we had to push it to the day before the release. So this is where we are right now. We have a window in between your appointments. So I really don't want to say that, but
I've got a pretty busy schedule today. And that being said, this was the only time I was available to get stuff done. So I'm thankful that we at the very least had some time before the initial release date, so we didn't have to, you know, go over time and either push it off till later in the week or, God forbid, the following week. This will be the extra speedy quick edition of the Zachary and Peaches Show, but at the very least, you know, we are going to be talking about two relatively short pilots, so I think this should work out at least somewhat in our favor.
Yeah, we're going to do this as quickly as we possibly can here. So very briefly, Emma, tell the listeners about how your life's been so far.
Things have just been busy as all get out. I've been working a lot. I've been going back and forth between, you know, different appointments and things. It's just, yeah, things have just been a bit hectic on my end. And again, I'm just thankful that I had the time in order to, you know, sit down and record, even if it was only for a relatively short window of time. In addition to that, real briefly, nothing much is really going on in my end project-wise. But, you know, at the very least, I am continuing to make some pretty good headway, on my Maxwell from Don't Starve themed fursuit that I'm making. For those of you who are unaware of that, I am making a Don't Starve themed werewolf fursuit, and I am very excited that I was finally able to, you know, get that opportunity. And Max is coming along beautifully, and if you want to see work in progress photos, they're up on my Instagram at Local Peaches Studios if you don't follow me already. But yeah, that's pretty much all I wanted to say about my own life, since it's pretty much just been the same old, except faster, for some reason. But yeah, anyway, Adrian, how have you been?
Last Thursday, it was a very rough shift for me over at Captain America's Diner at Islands of Adventure. I won't get too much into detail about it, but we were practically slammed because apparently there was some electrical issues over at Universal Studios Florida, and the team members over there were sending people with two park tickets to IOA first to start the day. So that's kind of what happened. And then of course I did a Marvel character dinner on Friday as a team member, did it on Saturday as a guest, so that was really cool. Posted some pictures up on my own Instagram, my personal Instagram at adrianmata.26 if you want to follow that. But on Friday I did notice a guest was wearing a Nirvana shirt, and I asked them, please name me one song from Nirvana that does not Smells Like Teen Spirit. They did not know that Nirvana was a grunge rock band from the early 90s. They thought it was a fashion brand. So there you go.
Well. Yeah, I mean, there's every once in a while there's people like that. But you know what? Let's not be gatekeepers, and people like funny words and funny images on their t-shirts. So as long as they're not being offensive,
I suppose.
As far as I'm concerned, it's silly, it's weird, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, it's not the end of, I was just trying to have fun. That's what
I understand that. Anyway. I totally get you. You're definitely, believe me, I've known you for what, 6-7 years now, and yeah, you're definitely not the gatekeeping type, trust me. I'm just
No, of course not. Of course not. And then, of course, I went to the Orlando Japan Festival for a couple hours on Sunday over at Kissimmee. So we got to see a bit of Japanese culture on stage and through the booths, several food and merchandise booths as well. So I had a fun time. I did wait like an hour to to get like some Japanese waffle and persimmon flavored soft serve ice cream there over at this Wafu. This little, I don't know, food truck kind of a thing there where they do Japanese waffles and soft serve ice cream. They have a location on Korean Drive in Orlando, but I will make it a point to go visit her at some point because you are not going to believe how good the food actually tastes there because I did get the Nutella filling and also the bacon and cheddar filling, and they're both really good. The Nutella, obviously sweet, and then the bacon and cheddar savory, and that's all I'll say here. But anyway, some obvious stuff from Universal Orlando. Holidays are going to be starting up at Universal Orlando this weekend. So that'll be on the 17th of November this week. It's going to run until December 31st. So if you want to go see the Universal's Holiday Parade featuring Macy's and Universal Studios Florida or Grinchmas at Universal's Islands of Adventure, this is the great time to come out. And of course, if you want to have a little bit of action to go alongside your dinner plans. Might I recommend the Marvel character dinner for maybe Thanksgiving and of course Christmas Eve, possibly New Year's Eve as well. So UniversalOrlando.com for all the details and to get your tickets and to make reservations. So yeah, that is that.
Oh man, I can't believe holiday events are already starting at Universal. That's crazy. Not saying that that's too early. I think end of this week is kind of a decent starting out point if you're kind of the person who's, you know, getting ready for the holidays and stuff, especially, you know, when it comes to a theme park. So believe me, not faulting them at all with their decision there. But at the same token, though, it's just I guess I make it more of a point, the fact that just time's flying. You know, it's hard to believe that the end of the year is literally, you know, so close we could almost taste it. And yeah, pretty soon, before you know it, you know, Thanksgiving will be here and the holidays will be here. And then after that, be New Year's and we get to start this mess all over again. So yeah, but I don't want to try to, you know, get too wrapped up in all of that, especially since, you know, with every passing year, time just, it seems to be, you know, speeding up faster and faster, at least on my end. And life already seems fast enough as it is with, you know, the nature of today's episode, due to, you know, other commitments I have after the episode. So yeah, anyway, won't get too into that. But yeah, very excited and hope you're able to hold on to your sanity as best as you can. Is that I know how busy theme parks can get around the holidays. Cause even though I've never worked one, at the very least I have visited a couple for their Christmas events and stuff. So that being said, I indirectly feel your pain because I've seen it, you know, firsthand from other people.
Yeah, pray for us. We're gonna need a lot of it. So, to get through the holiday season. So, Anyway, we had four Cowskippy notes this week. I'm going to push two of those to next week here. But we're going to get to number one here. Trent from KSN 16 local news from in Joplin, Missouri and Pittsburgh, Kansas. Those are the markets. Well, those are the cities being served by that station. KSNF is the official call sign for that station. He also does this podcast / website called The Foul Line. And we'll put a link to that in the description there of this episode. But he ran like a short opinion piece called Everyone is Sick of Taylor Swift. And it starts out, quote, ask any NFL fan what they think of Taylor Swift, and all of them would say, I'm sick of Taylor Swift. It's all you ever hear about on social media anymore. Just the other day, Travis being at Taylor's concert, Travis being at Taylor's concert at Buenos Aires. And as previously mentioned, social media
Buenos Aires, is it in Argentina? Then yes, it is.
Yes. And as previously mentioned, social media had a frenzy. Plus, quite possibly the hottest Halloween costume this year, other than Barbie again, was Taylor and Travis. And of course, fans have finally had enough, according to an October 30th poll of 16,000 random Americans via the American Survey. So the share of Americans who say they want less Swift in our football coverage is an overwhelming 89.3%. The people have spoken and overwhelmingly said they want less Taylor coverage during NFL games. And I'll leave it at that here. I'll put an end quote to that because I want you to read the whole, read the short opinion piece yourself there. We'll put a link to that in the description there of that episode there. But we talked about the Eras Tour, that Taylor Swift's the Eras Tour, both the Nashville concert tour and the concert film for I think when we did our Corpse Bride episode to start off the season there. But do you think there might be a little bit of oversaturation of Taylor Swift, especially in today's pop culture in these times?
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I've been done with Taylor Swift since like 2011. My emo ass isn't that, you know, big of a fan. I stopped being a Swiftie, you know, at a relatively young age. So that being said, you know, just the fact that I agree, the news is so oversaturated with just, you know, about her and her new squeeze and all that stuff. I think just, you know, again, no fault for anyone who likes Taylor Swift and likes her music or whatever the case is. But, you know, at the same token, though, I think it's time that we really focus on other things and other people. And that's pretty much what I've got to say about that subject. But yeah, anyway, never thought I would have anything in common with NFL fans, but here we are.
Yeah, it's I'm afraid it's kind of really come to that point. Even as somebody who likes listening to her music, then you know, we just got to keep it on to the you know, for especially for the sports broadcasters, we got to keep it to the sports first and foremost, and not.
I agree with you. Just try to focus on, you know, the specific thing at hand, because people go to Taylor Swift concerts to listen to Taylor Swift, and they go to sports games to watch sports. So that being said, I think just because any musician, whether it be Taylor Swift or, you know, anyone else, I think, you know, having news on that level of a relationship, I think is kind of silly, especially if you just, you know, constantly try to mention it. And even if it's, you know, during a game where this guy isn't even playing. So yeah, that being said, I agree with NFL fans, which is a strange sentence to say, but I agree with them. Keep sports and music, at least, you know, news-wise, relatively separate entities.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, keep the focus on the sports in hand, keep it focused on that. Like, of course, you can just focus on the celebrities, but just not too constantly, I would think. And there was also a film called Coyote vs. Acme, which is a hybrid live-action animated film that was already completed at Warner Bros. Unfortunately, it was canceled, and And that was after it had been taken off the release schedule in favor of the Barbie the movie, which was released on the same day as Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. Warner Brothers Discovery canceled Coyote versus Acme even after it was completed on earlier this month. But now there are reports. There is a report from the news media company Pug, which IndieWire has confirmed that it may be revived. It may be revived at another distributor. So there's every bit of possibility that perhaps it could end up, you know, perhaps at some like another distributor like A24 or through a streamer like Netflix, Prime Video. I don't know. From what we have heard there, like I think from the little bits I think we have heard about the film there. How do you feel about the situation there? Like having it canned by Warner Brothers, and now there's the possibility that it could be revived and distributed by another distributor.
I mean, I don't know whether or not any other distributor would be. I mean, from a copyright standpoint, first and foremost, I don't know if it would completely be possible. Warner Brothers would have to, you know, basically at least temporarily, you know, relinquish their rights to Looney Tunes, or at the very least, you know, the Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner property to another studio slash, at least not a studio, but another distributor in order to get this film, you know, actually out there.
But the film was already completed, so true, now it's just a matter, yeah.
That's the thing, is since they've already finished the film, this is such weird territory because of the fact that, you know, with streaming and the fact that, you know, typically Warner Brothers and specifically, you know, Looney Tunes properties are all released on, say, Max, for example, which is pretty much the almost, you know, exclusively Warner Brothers streaming service. But at the same token, though, something else could happen. You know, Netflix could pick it up. Whatever the case is, they are going to have to settle all the messy copyright nonsense with whoever decides to finally distribute the film, if it ever gets distributed. Hopefully it will, especially considering the fact that it's finished. I guess quick aside before, you know, we change subjects or whatever, but from what I've heard and from what I've seen, you know, being a person who's both, you know, trying to get into the industry as well as hearing discussions from people who, you know, have worked at the Warner Brothers Animation Studio before, whether it's, you know, someone I knew from Ottawa or whatever the case is, you know, Warner Brothers Animation seems to be very notorious for canning projects even when they're already finished and just never releasing them. I don't know exactly why. I mean, I guess, again, I think it's probably all a money situation, especially considering the fact that, you know, this film was put off primarily because of, you know, they thought that Barbie would be more of a successful movie and all of that kind of stuff, and, you know, all everything in favor of that movie instead. And yeah, I mean, it did wonderfully in the box office. It broke records. Which they were right about, but I think in general, you know, it was strange that they canned it when it was basically a complete film. Let's just again hope that Max or some other streaming service decides to pick it up, and with, you know, the proper settlement, that they can, that this film will be able to be seen by someone somewhere other than the people who spent hours and possibly even years of their life trying to work on. So yeah. That being said, I think if anything, I hope for the animators involved with that project, the animators, the actors, you know, all of the driving force behind this film will, you know, be able to see it get made and be able to be given the proper credit for it.
Certainly. And Warner Brothers did agree to pay streaming bonuses to the actors. So that might be potentially the reason why they have agreed to let this film be distributed by another entity. We've got a speedy edition of the Zachary and Peach Show to get to as we support Indie Animation this week. Lackadaisy, Animation Digital Circus. Jared's going to tell you all about it as we get on to break here. So we will be right back.
Next on the Zachary and Peaches Show, the Prohibition era, speakeasies, and feline gangsters take center stage in this charming short film. Adrian and Emma take a look at the Lackadaisy pilot and talk about its storyline, as well as the unique qualities it holds as the precursor to the upcoming web animated series. And later, we continue to support independent animation by taking a look at the amazing Digital Circus with its unique take on dark humor amidst the character's struggle against insanity. Coming up after the break.
It's the must-listen interview of the season.
It was a lot to take in, for sure.
Jim Stanton of Studio 31 Media Archive sat down with me, Adrian Mata, to discuss about the troubles his YouTube channel has faced recently. Fair use, copyright laws, and archiving broadcast media are at the forefront of this cautionary tale.
Until this all happened, I've never had any issues with any party before until all this, and I've been doing this for a total of 16 years.
How did he respond, and what does the future hold for Studio 31?
I feel like I'm specifically being targeted. My future using YouTube might be up in the air. I don't think YouTube cares for its providers that much.
The Zachman Exclusive, Fair Use, Copyright Laws, and Archiving Broadcast Media. A conversation with Jim Stanton of Studio 31 Media Archive. Listen now on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for the Zachary and Peaches Show.
To be honest, I wish I knew.
Hey, Emma here. Stay tuned for this week's question. Spotify listeners can reply through this platform's Q&A feature on their mobile device to have their say. You can also reply on Adrian's profile at AdrianMata26 on DeviantArt and Tumblr to this episode's recap entry on both platforms, or through our show's Instagram and Threads accounts at Zachary and Peaches with your thoughts. We can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Animation in the conversation. This is the Zachary and Peaches Show.
We are back with the Zachary and Peaches Show. Alongside Emma Settles, I'm Adrian Monta, and we're going to be supporting indie animation this week on the podcast here, albeit at a quick pace because of course, we are in a bit of a time crunch here. But Lackadaisy, of course, has generated a lot of buzz because of how well, you know, because of the development of that short film turned pilot, and also, you know, how well it is really done in terms of views and whatnot here. So let's go ahead and get onto our synopsis here that we've got right here. So it's 1927 in St. Louis, Missouri, albeit in the feline universe, and the Prohibition era is in full swing. Rocky Rickaby, Freckle McMurray, and Ivy Pepper dig up a coffin full of whiskey from a supplier of theirs, but they're soon ambushed by the Marigold Gang, consisting of former Lackadaisy member Mordecai Heller and siblings Nicodem and Seraphine, or is it Seraphine? The animated shorts film, serving as a pilot to the upcoming web series of the same name, follows the two gangs as they rival each other in providing much-needed alcohol to their customers, under secrecy from the government, no matter what it takes to do so. So with that synopsis out of the way, Emma, where do you want to start here? The storyline, the qualities of the animation, or other redeeming qualities that make it stand out, or where do you want to go?
I think starting out with the story as we usually do, I think would make the most sense here. Ultimately, from what I've noticed with watching this pilot, is that the basis of this story is very, it's very tried and true. And that's not to say in, you know, that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, you know, basically the format of, you know, rival gangs, or, you know, two rival groups going at it for, you know, ultimate, you know, being the proper, not proper, but, you know, being the superior or the leading or the top or, you know, whatever, is definitely a story that we have seen a lot just since the history of storytelling. But at the same token, though, what makes this particularly interesting is that, again, every single animated property, you know, regardless of what it is, needs, and this was something that was kind of drilled into my head when I was in animation school myself, but every single animated property needs a reason for the medium. So that being said, what is the reason as to why this property is told within the animation format as opposed to, you know, live action film, even other forms of drawn media such as still comics? And I think ultimately what makes Lackadaisy stand out and what makes it, you know, appropriate for this medium especially is because of the fact that the most obvious answer is the fact that we're talking about anthropomorphic cats. They're, you know, it's not just two rival alcohol distributing gangs. They are two rival alcohol distributing gangs of anthropomorphic animals. And I mean, if anything, that's besides, you know, the lovely style itself, you know, that's what primarily drew me to the Lackadaisy property, is just because of the fact that it's anthropomorphic media. But at the same token, though, I think, you know, saying I liked it just because of that reason, I think is, I think it's an understatement, because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons as to why I think, you know, and pretty much anyone who loves animation should check out Lackadaisy. Because, you know, again, if you think about it, back to the whole storyline, you know, with these two rival gangs, one being an ex-member or knowing somebody from the other rival group, you know, even though it's kind of a story that's in some ways been beaten to death, at the same token, it's being told in a way that is very visually interesting, and being told in the way that I think as we get more information on these characters and about this world, that I think things will start to get really, really interesting. I mean, I think in general, what makes this story shine in particular is the fact that there is not just conflict between these two groups of cats, but there is also conflict by the means of the feds being in town, as the one of the characters in the short suggested that, and with, you know, prohibition being in full swing, these characters are not only butting heads with, you know, each other, but they're also butting heads with the law. And I think, you know, that three-way conflict, I think, makes for a very interesting dynamic in between, makes for a very interesting conflict, and makes for a very interesting storyline. Again, it's something that's been done a lot, but I think if there's anything that, you know, I know about Lackadaisy, is that it will be done in a way that is nuanced and interesting, if only for the reason that it's being told in an anthropomorphic animation format. I think, if anything, you know, this pilot, aside from the absolutely stunning animation, like, I don't think I've seen indie studio 2D animation that is quite as fluid, as almost constantly on model, and just as genuinely lovely and fun to watch as, you know, what the folks who are currently working on this project are doing. But, you know, in general, I think if there's anything in particular that is a takeaway from this pilot, besides, of course, the introduction of the storyline, and again, as I kind of bring it back, it's a basic story, which, yes, it is, but at the same token, this is also a pilot, which is the caveat here, and that's what I was about to bring up. With it being a pilot, it needs to be accessible to pretty much anybody who is going into, you know, this world, you know, curious about it, but doing it in a way that's, you know, they know nothing or next to nothing about it. Even I myself, I mean, I've been following the main concept artist for this web series for years. But at the same token, though, I've really only gotten to have little glimpses of character personalities and the visual world of Lackadaisy because of the fact that I had the access to just, you know, concept drawings and sketches and paintings and just a bunch of viz dev work, as opposed to, you know, an actual written plot of the story. And so I think by keeping it, by starting it off simply, I think that was the smartest decision, because eventually, as relationships become more and more complex, that, yeah, relationships shouldn't, you know, be ultimately very, very, you know, in your face kind of big details that are, you know, big story points in the show shouldn't be completely revealed yet, because it's the beginning, and you, again, as I keep saying, you have to be accessible. So that being said, I think by keeping the story, by starting it off more simply, I think that eventually, as we get more episodes, things will start to get more and more intense and more interesting, specifically surrounding the relationships between all of the main characters, and specifically between the main trio of Rocky, Freckle, and Ivy, and especially their connection with Mordecai. And, you know, I'll get into more about the characters in just a little bit. But again, yeah, if anything, I think by keeping things simple, it's not a detriment. If anything, it will eventually allow itself to become a more interesting, complex storyline, especially because we already have this three-way split in conflict. And that then eventually you have this jumping off point, and it can lead to a lot of really fascinating places in the future.
I kind of want to bring this up here, but the way that they chose kind of not to reinvent the wheel, so to speak, with regards to the storyline here, it reminds me of it's kind of an In-N-Out Burger kind of situation, even though I'm not quite a fan of In-N-Out Burger, but the way they kind of really executed the storyline with the animation style and the other stylistic choices that they made, both visually and in writing, I think it's really the most impressive thing about this pilot / short film. So, you know, major props to Iron Giant, who of course is behind, of course, the pilot / short film there, but they did a really amazing job with this piece there.
Absolutely. I mean, just if anything, again, this pilot, from what I've seen with other pilots I've seen in the past, with everything that I've heard about other animated pilots, especially animated pilots for independent animation, I think, you know, this Lackadaisy, I think, does everything, at least, you know, their pilot does everything that a good, successful pilot should. It introduces you to the personalities and the mindsets of the characters and the world with which they live in. And it does it in a way that it introduces potential points of conflict, but doesn't overcomplicate them right off the bat. Because if it overcomplicates things, then eventually the show could very easily become sloppy or messy or run out of ideas, or things in general could just not work out. And with all the development and all of the love and the care that the people who initially were behind this idea had put into it, I think, you know, that would have been a travesty. So that being said, I think by sticking with a very basic introductory plot, and, you know, as you said, not reinventing the wheel, eventually things will start to get more and more complex, specifically as Lackadaisy will absolutely have repeat customers, so to speak, with using the whole fast food metaphor here. So eventually people will become invested in this world and these characters because they got that really juicy, fascinating glimpse into the world, but not being force-fed unnecessary detail.
And let me correct something that I said a little bit earlier. It's Iron Circus that did the animation and production, not Iron Giant. I apologize. Let's go
that
on
is
to
another
the
animated movie.
Yes. Let's go on to the characters here, and you mentioned Mordecai. I associate the name more often with a certain blue jay that happens to be shipped with a purple princess pony, but that's another topic for a whole different time here. But what about this main trio's relationship with Mordecai there that could be implied there within the pilot and hopefully expanded upon over the course of the animated web series there?
Certainly, and before we delve into that. For those of you who are not aware, we actually do, we actually have a segment on one of our past episodes from the first season, I believe the second half of the first season, where we actually talk about the other Mordecai and his relationship, quote unquote, with Twilight Sparkle and just the nature of crack shipping in general. So if you want to listen to that segment, go ahead and give that a listen. It's a wild ride, as crack shipping is. Or tends to be, but again, we're getting distracted. And this is the super speedy quick episode. So yeah, back on topic here. But yeah, I think the nature of the relationship between Mordecai the cat, and the other three main characters, I think is incredibly fascinating. I think will be a great jumping off point for the messiness, the actual meat and potatoes of the individual character conflict, to really springboard off of, especially as, you know, I think, you know, before specifically getting into speculation here, I think one of the things I really want to praise, another thing that I really want to praise Lackadaisy on is that it uses a lot of show don't tell. Or show first, then tell. And in general, with the nature, if you watch Mordecai specifically, you can see that he's obviously, you know, much more composed, stoic, a little more calculated than both Rocky and his gang are, as well as, you know, even the two other characters who accompany him on his mission to stop Rocky and his gang from getting the booze. But, you know, the interesting part about it is that from the fact that we have this great close-up shot of Mordecai, right? And he's holding his gun, he's about to shoot, but then he looks in the back window of the getaway car that Ivy is driving, and he just stops himself. And I think, if anything, that sort of gets you to think, wait a minute, why is Mordecai being very... Why is he showing this level of concern and this level of reservation for pulling the trigger? Because if he's supposed to be, you know, the leader of the rebel gang, or at the very least the leader of this specific sector of the rebel gang, then why is he so hesitant about possibly, you know, harming or killing whoever he needs to harm or kill in order to get his quote-unquote liquid gold, as Rocky called it earlier in the episode. So, yeah, I think by showing that first and then having that scene, that interesting post-credit scene where Mordecai is in the phone booth talking with who I can only assume is his boss, and eventually admits to the, you know, someone eventually admits to the fact that, you know, someone in Rocky's group, you know, has a connection to Mordecai and seems to be, quote unquote, you know, double timing, seems to be someone who is, you know, being a double agent for Mordecai's group. And, you know, the fact that it had this really brilliant moment of silent character contemplation and thought, and then having that, having your assumptions confirmed by the episode, I think is just a very smart way of approaching storytelling, because nothing is worse than having a story where everything is told to you right off the bat. You have, you know, useless explanation, and, you know, we didn't need a narrator going, and here Mordecai is thinking X, Y, and Z because he has a connection to insert character here, which is why he refuses to pull the trigger on the gun. So, you know, that being said, by showing character behavior and suggesting relationships just through a small gesture of, you know, not shooting at the other group after they, you know, basically get away with the whiskey, and then having that confirmed, I think it's very rewarding as an audience member. And I think it really engages an active thought process with the characters and with the character personality, especially as Mordecai is one of these characters that we know very little about, considering the fact that he is so cold and calculated. And, you know, I feel like he hides a lot. You can sort of see it in his face and in his mannerisms. And by having that basically confirmed and only getting little glimpses of, you know, Mordecai's true self or his backstory or whatever the case is, I think is overall very smart, especially considering the fact that he is one of, if not the main antagonists for, at the very least, this specific arc of the story.
I think just hearing hearing you talk about the small gestures and movements and whatnot, I think I'm reminded of this phrase, of this term here called KISS. And it's kind of really a simple term, it's kind of really a simple acronym. It stands for Keep It Simple, Stupid. And I think what Lackadaisic did was they kept things very, very simple and just straight to the point, and just kind of revealed a little bit of their, you know, a little bit of their motives, a little bit of their thoughts and actions just by those small physical movements and gestures. And they did a really nice job of doing that, in addition to everything else that we have pretty much said about this short there.
Absolutely. And again, I in general, I just think that if anything, again, back to the whole one metaphor you used earlier on in this segment, but I think, you know, in general, at the very least, they're going to be, Lackadaisy is going to have a repeat customer, so to speak, in me, because of the fact that I think they used simple storytelling and simple base storylines very well in a way that is approachable and smart and interesting, and especially visually interesting too. Like, my God, I can't, I wish I had more time to just elaborate all of my feelings towards the gorgeous animation, but, you know, I really can't, especially given time constraints currently. But hey, you know, at the very least, I'm thankful that we have something as incredible as this, because of the fact that, you know, if anything, it's just another big win for both the furry community as well as for indie animation in general. So, yeah. Congratulations to Iron Circus and everyone else involved in the development of Lackadaisy. And I seriously cannot wait to see what you guys continue to develop and come up with as more episodes are hopefully released very soon.
Long story short, we loved it. We hope you do too. And let's hope it lives up to the hype. You know, with this upcoming web series that is supposed to begin at some point next year. The Lackadaisy pilot is available to stream now on YouTube. We'll put a link to that in the episode of this. Put a link into the description of this episode. Excuse me. I am mixing up my words here today here, especially with the time pressure that we got here. But anyway, we're going to be right back with more of our support for indie animation. We're going to be talking about the Amazing Digital Circus here on the Zachary and Peaches Show for something completely different, and we will be right back.
Coming up on the Zachary and Peaches Show, we join the Amazing Digital Circus. Adrian and Emma discuss the show's unique qualities and its take on dark humor as its inhabitants struggle in the search for sanity in this story from YouTube animator Gooseworks. Our support for indie animation continues next.
Here now is this week's question. I'm Adrian Mata. Emma and I just talked about Lackadaisy, and coming up, we'll be discussing about the Amazing Digital Circus. Both indie animation pilots have generated a lot of positive buzz surrounding their releases, so we want to hear from you. Is indie animation performing better than the larger studios as of late? Let us know now through Spotify's Q&A feature on your mobile device. You can also reply to this episode's recap entry on DeviantArt and Tumblr through my profile on both platforms at AdrianMata26. Or to our show's Instagram and Threads accounts at Zachary and Peaches. The Zachary and Peaches Show resumes in just a moment.
It's time for more animation.
This is kind of like the ultimate journey between Retzko and Haida. Because finally, the man worked up the courage to ask her out, and she said yes.
More autism.
I've done like a playlist / mixtape on Spotify for it. I've started a fanfic on it that's I'm trying to get off and running here, where Nimona's kind of really trying to deal with the aftermath of the events in the movie.
And more everything else.
Do you honestly you probably know what I'm going to say. Spirit Halloween could open in freaking February, and I would not care. I'd be in there all the freaking damn time.
Season 2 of the Zachary and Peaches Show. New episodes every Tuesday on most major podcast platforms. Autism, and now everything else. The Zachary and Peaches Show continues.
We are back with more of the Zachary and Peaches Show, and continuing to support indie animation. We also have an SCD that focuses on another piece of indie animation, and of course another pilot with the in the Amazing digital circus. And since I read the synopsis last time, Emma, why don't you go ahead and read it?
Of course. A young woman is transported into a circus-themed digital universe after wearing a virtual reality headset. With no recollection of her name or her past, she is given the name Pomni by Kane, the ringleader of the circus. Pomni, as well as Jax, Ragatha, Gangle, Kanger, and Zubal, must go on adventures assigned to them by Kane in order to keep them from going insane, all while traversing through the claustrophobic and unnatural digital environment as Pomni searches for an exit from the realm. This concept was surprisingly interesting. And, you know, but before we get into the meat and potatoes, obviously, of this discussion about this pilot, I think this is a moment of perhaps I had judged you too harshly with the Amazing Digital Circus. And I suppose what I mean by that is, you know, I tend to be the kind of person who tries to avoid really popular things unless something, you know, visually or, you know, something stands out to me. Something makes it seem even more remarkable, that at least, you know, in my taste, than, you know, your standard sort of thing, which is, I guess it's kind of sad because I feel like, you know, I'm kind of limiting myself. But at the same token, though, as most people are, I'm very picky about the media that I engage with. And, you know, I wanted to, because of the fact that, you know, everyone in their, you know, cousins, uncles, wife's brother, sons is, you know, screaming about the Amazing Digital Circus online, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe I'll, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll either skip this or, you know, I'll watch it once the hype dies down or, you know, whatever the case is. I think, you know, at the very least, I think that was kind of not a great mindset to have, especially when it comes to this pilot, because holy cow, did I have a lot of fun watching this pilot. I mean, if anything, you know, the Amazing Digital Circus has such a fascinating sort of vibe to it because, I mean, it takes a lot from sort of like, you know, a lot of early 2000s, mid to late 90s computer games. And it's got that really, that specific vibe. Like, basically, just watching it almost feels like, you know, it's almost like you're staring into an arcade carpet, if that makes any sense at all. But, you know, again, I'm thankful that I was able to get, you know, get an opportunity to give it a try because of the fact that, you know, maybe I should believe the hype some in certain circumstances, especially since, you know, this show, I feel, you know, definitely was worth my time, and it will be worth yours too if you're on the fence about watching it. It's a lot of fun. But, you know, if anything, I think one of the things that really stands out or is really fascinating about this pilot is the fact that it seems to have it kind of hides the horror elements that are really tied into it. I think, you know, if you really think about it, the Amazing Digital Circus is kind of in a very strange way, almost like the same premises, but not of, and you're probably going to kill me for mentioning this again, but I'll take any opportunity I have to you know, shout it out in this podcast. But it almost seems like Don't Starve, but not. And what I mean by this is that, you know, Don't Starve has a very sort of bleak and creepy and, you know, it also uses a lot of muted colors and has a very Burton-esque kind of art style and, you know, but at the same token, though, it hides a lot of really silly mechanics. I mean, if anything, you use ham as a weapon in that game. You don't all of the weapons you use are either silly or inherently cowardly, and you encounter all these weird monsters that are just hybrid animals, and all of the characters have a fantastic sense of humor in their own right. So that being said, it's dark and a little bleak, but it's also very silly. Back to the amazing digital circus. But the reason why I bring up Don't Starve is that because it seems like that concept, but reversed. Here you have a world that is very brightly colored and in your face and silly and weird and charming. However, within that, it hides a lot of really dark and bizarre elements, specifically with starting with the fact that you can't escape. Basically, when you get stuck in the digital circus, you're in the digital circus until your sprite corrupts and, you know, you literally go insane. I guess another strange connection between DST and the Amazing Digital Circus is, you know, you're in a world with practically no escape and there's a very real threat of insanity. But, you know, that being said, the Amazing Digital Circus, what it does differently is that it hides it within this very charming sort of aesthetic. As I guess I had mentioned before, it has a very, you know, 90s, early 2000s kids game kind of a feel to it. But at the same token, though, it hides a lot of really genuine existential horror, specifically considering the characters of, specifically, you know, Ragatha and Pomni in particular. As Pomni once she finds out, oh yeah, there's an exit, I can finally, I'll play along, you know, this is a dream, I can finally escape, you know, after completing whatever task this crazy ringmaster Kane has in store for me, and then I can finally, you know, wake up and continue with my real life. However, at the same token, once she finally reaches this exit, it's revealed that Kane basically designed an endless maze of doors in this really strange, bleak office space sort of environment that, you know, eventually just leads out to, as Kane literally describes it in the episode, the void. So that being said, you know, it's literally a world that's been programmed to you know, only fit within the parameters of the quote-unquote game itself, and everything outside of it is just, it's the void. I mean, if anything, we've got a lot of strange, bizarre, existential horror going on in the show, if anything, because of the fact that you have characters, including one of the quote-unquote minor characters who literally turns into just this giant glitching blob that just, you know, spends a majority of the episode chasing Pomni throughout the wacky halls of the digital circus. And, yeah, I mean, if there's that, of course, and then, you know, with the very real threat of not just insanity, but also just complete, you know, destruction, eventually, you know, just glitching out of existence, as Ragatha definitely has made it very apparent within her whole very anxious speech as to Pomni as they are walking down the hallways looking for the character that's revealed that is, you know, the sprite's gone corrupt. So yeah, if anything, and then of course right at the end, you know, the characters saying, oh, you know, we don't need, even though we're eating this, you know, digital feast in this perfect digital world, you know, we can't, you know, eating doesn't really make any sense here. We can't eat, we can't sleep, we can't really do anything here because it's all meaningless. Because we're stuck in this weird digital world where everything is supposed to be perfect, but it's not. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, I think that what this show does very well is that it hides a lot of genuinely very deep and almost frightening topics, but it addresses it in a way that's A, you know, very funny, or B, is genuinely terrifying, but is presented in this, you know, bright, cheerful sort of world where everything is supposed to be perfect, but in reality, it isn't. So, yeah, I mean, if anything, it's just, yeah, I think to bring this full circle, you know, I think if you're on the fence about watching The Amazing Digital Circus, especially if you are, you know, you like sort of a webcore or a kidcore aesthetic, or even if you're a Don't Starve fan like I am, you know, I think you should probably give this a try because of the fact that it's got a really unique way of addressing strange and dark topics in a way that's fascinating and humorous. So I think, again, if anything, Amazing Digital Circus was definitely worth my time, and I don't know, maybe I will, you know, go back to it in the future and watch other episodes, but if anything, the pilot was a fun ride, and I'm incredibly happy that the incredible YouTube team, animators, Gooseworks in particular, was just able to make this story come to life in a amazing way.
Kind of borrow the title, part of the title for how to conclude your entire monologue about this whole pilot. Anyway, I have two things here. Now, number one, Pommy is basically trapped in there at least until Gooseworks or somebody else on the Glitch staff can figure out a way to conclude the story, be it for one season or however many they want to do it. Number two, I guess this is your living proof that Clay Animation needs to do a Don't Starve animated series, I suppose. Oh,
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, believe me, literally, as I was watching this pilot, I was thinking to myself, so Kane is basically Maxwell if he just drank 45 cups of espresso. Not shots of espresso, cups. Full ass Starbucks Venti style cups of espresso. And, you know, I saw a lot of weird parallels because, you know, the digital circus is a weird world with no escape. The constant is a weird world with no escape. And, you know, with this, you know, high demand for indie studios making basically comedy horror animation on the rise, if anything, I think, you know, the success of Gooseworks new series, I think, is a good nudge finally to Clay to finally make a Don't Starve animated series, because I think, you know, a lot of fans, as well as people who have never even seen the game or who like Amazing Digital Circus or anything, you know, that's got a similar storyline or tone to it, regardless of style. Yeah, I think in general, it just goes to show you that, yeah, I think this might be the right time to consider it. Again, not sure if Jamie Chang or anyone involved on the Clay team would be privy to that, but at the very least, I think it behooves them to give it a go. if the success of the Cuphead show and the Five Nights at Freddy's movie didn't prove to them anything,
I think if Clay decided, you know, if they do decide to start up a Don't Starve animated series, be it a web series or an actual streaming or TV series, I think no doubt there might be comparisons to The Amazing Digital Circus. And I think that will be, I think that, that those might be valid comparisons anyway, because of how different these two particular universes are, but also how similar they might be. in terms of I think in terms of how the settings kind of really in terms of the environment, in terms of the characters, in terms of the situations that, you know, the characters from these respective universes are in.
Absolutely. I mean, if anything, you know, again, if you're kind of grabbing at straws, you're still not completely seeing my comparison here, is, you know, again, you're put in this world with no escape, and the only thing that's, you know, the only person you can go to is someone who is physically very hard to reach and get to. And ultimately he reveals to you that there truly is no escape, and that I too am being used as a puppet for whatever higher sort of power, be it, you know, them, quote unquote, in the Don't Starve universe, or, you know, whoever you know, is responsible for coding the game in the Amazing Digital Circus, or if they even decide to go that route and have a sort of weird, you know, you can only get out if the creator says you can get out sort of scenario. But yeah, if anything, I think that as I was watching the series, I think another reason why I enjoyed it so much is because I was able to see even loose parallels between the two properties, and I think that, if anything, that really led me into enjoying it more than I initially thought I would. Plus, there's technically also a giant red and white, I think, striped sandworm-ish creature. So, yeah, if anything, there's little elements and also little nods to the Burton aesthetic and style in the Amazing Digital Circus as well. So hope they continue with that. But again, that's just my own stylistic preferences. And I guess as we end all segments like this, fantastic work to everyone involved with the series, and hopefully I will get more episodes, and I wish the creators nothing but the best.
Absolutely. The pilot to the Amazing Digital Circus is also available to stream now on YouTube. We'll also put a link to that episode in the description of this episode. So that is it for this sped up edition of the Zachary and Peaches Show. Next week is our fan request episode, and thank you to all of you who have submitted suggestions for that episode for next week. We're going to reveal what we're going to be talking about at some point throughout the week, or maybe we'll probably reveal it the day of. Well, who knows? Well, I'll probably end up deciding anyway. But Emma, I'm kind of really excited about what our listeners have suggested for us to analyze and review.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if anything, this will give us an opportunity to either revisit old media that we initially thought we would discuss, but never really got to, or didn't know how to crowbar it into our schedule, or it completely introduces us to something entirely new that either I haven't, or you haven't, or neither of us have seen, and it gives us an opportunity to just discuss about something that's entirely out of our wheelhouse. So yeah, that being said, I think this will be a great opportunity for us, and I genuinely look forward to seeing what we ultimately decide to do for that episode. But until now, three cheers to Indie Animation. And yeah, even though this was a relatively quick episode, I'm glad that we got an opportunity to do it, because it was a lot of fun. And I'm also thankful that I had an opportunity to check out these pilots. One that I've been wanting to check out since the day it dropped, but unfortunately never really had the time. And the other one, which I felt like sleeping on, but I'm so glad that I didn't, because it was really good.
Absolutely. And I also want to emphasize that if we do not choose your suggestion for next week's episode, we might keep it in mind for a future episode of the Zachary Peaches Show, so you never know when it might pop up. So if it doesn't pop up next week, keep an eye out for it, and maybe we'll go ahead. Maybe we'll shoehorn it into our I guess we'll shoehorn it into a future episode somewhere down the road here. But for right now, for this week, I'm Adrian Mata.
And I'm Emma Settles.
We've got to run off, but we'll be back with another new episode of the Zachary Peaches Show next week. Our fan request episode next week. Until then, so long for right now.
Bye.
This is Jared Harris speaking for the Zachary and Peaches Show. Produced, edited, and co-hosted by Adrian Mata and co-hosted with Emma Settles. The Zachary and Peaches Show is a Sackland original podcast.